by Monica. Good morning.
Morning.
Hello, this is operator. Is that Mr. Boswinkle?
Yeah.
Yes, hello, sir. I'm just trying to dial out Miss Ismail and Miss Hong too.
Yeah.
And I'll just join them into the conference with you.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you for calling.
Good morning.
Good morning, Aubrey.
Hey, Aubrey.
Hi. I should say good day or something. No, it's morning. Not morning for you all.
Good morning, sir.
Morning for Bart.
Yeah.
Oh, where are you?
The posh courtyard by Marriott in Marina Del Rey.
Ooh.
Oh, no, I'm at the Hilton Lax. You know, the one where we had the meeting.
Oh, are you?
Yeah. This is where we have the policy retreat.
Oh, that's right. You're on the policy retreat.
Yeah.
I forgot you guys were doing that.
Sometimes we do things.
What a lovely way to start a long day of policy retreat.
Well, then there's a board call at 11 o'clock tonight, our time.
I see. A good long day, then.
Good morning. Who just...
Good morning. Yes, this is Manel from Egypt.
Hi, Manel. How are you? This is Bart.
I'm fine, thank you. Hi, Bart.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Hi, Hong.
Oh.
Hello. Hello, I'm Jonathan Shea from .hk.
Hi,
hello,
Jonathan.
Hi, hello, Jonathan.
How are you?
Now, that sounds like Bart and Hong
yeah.
and me
Jonathan.
And Jonathan.
Oh, only three of us?
No, hang on.
No. It's Manal is here.
Hi, Manal.
And Kurt is here as well.
Hi.
Kurt, how are you?
All righty.
What time is it for you, Kurt? 5 o'clock in the morning?
Yep.
Very impressive. Bart, you have an excuse because for you it's midday.
No,
hi, this is Edmund
Bart.
Joining.
Sorry, who's that?
Edmund joining.
Hi,
Edmund, how are you?
Hi, good.
Excellent. Did you get any sleep, Bart?
Yeah.
Do you have a? Are you on the roof garden or are you above the roof garden?
No, I'm on the roof garden.
You poor
pool,
chap.
Next to the pool.
Yeah, that's awful.
Yeah, that's convenient.
How inconvenient for you. I almost wish I was there, but not quite.
Good morning. A lot of people have joined.
What, they've joined you on the roof garden?
No, on the call.
Well, we'll give it a few minutes to see who else comes along.
So, Chris, this is Charles Chaban.
Oh, Charles, how are you?
Fine, thank you.
Fantastic to have you on the call.
Oh, thank you. My pleasure.
Hey, Jonathan.
Yes?
What time is it in Hong Kong right now? Is it 8 o'clock?
8 p.m.
It is 8. Yeah, it's interesting. I have two world clocks on my computer, and one of the world clocks is telling me that it's actually 9 p.m. in Hong Kong, so they're obviously wrong.
Yes.
I thought that was the case.
Hello, who just joined?
Who was that?
It was Donna.
Good
Hello,
morning,
Donna. Donna, where are you?
I'm in Los Angeles.
Oh, it's 5 o'clock in the morning for you.
It is.
Jolly good.
You know how much I'm up at this time of the morning.
When did you get in?
Saturday.
Oh, you've been there for ages.
Oh, yeah, days. Even.
Hello, who just joined?
Hello, this is Bertrand Lachapelle speaking.
Hi, good morning.
Ah, Bertrand, ça va?
Oui. All right. Actually, it's supposed to be my holidays this week, but it's okay.
Oh, look. Living in Australia, it's constantly a holiday. It's non-stop.
Yes. One of the troubles of information technologies, among others. You cannot pretend you're away.
Are you in Paris?
No, I'm in the countryside, just a little bit outside of Paris.
Now you're making me very jealous. Where are you?
Near Chantilly.
Oh, how terrible for you. Ile de Marge, huh?
Yeah. Great pity.
Indeed. Oh, dear. That's very sad.
Yeah. No, I was very sorry I couldn't make the previous call. But
I wouldn't worry too much. You didn't miss much. Actually, I'm glad you weren't there. It already ran for an hour and a half.
Do I see a hint of an irony there?
Just a tad.
I gladly bear this burden of having this reputation.
Mm. Oh, you love it. You love it. Are you coming to Geneva for the IGF? Or?
Yes, of course.
Excellent. So will you be able to come for the working group meeting on the Monday?
I saw that. I will definitely consider coming, of course. Will it be in the afternoon? I didn't.
Yeah, it'll be 3 o'clock. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
No, sorry, no, it'll be 1 o'clock. 1 o'clock.
1 o'clock.
Oh, no, 3 o'clock. So 1 o'clock UTC, which is 3 o'clock Geneva time.
Oh, okay. Okay. No, 3 o'clock. I think I can make it.
They give people the chance to arrive on the Monday morning.
Do you know where you're doing it yet?
I think. Hi, Avery.
Oh, hi, Avery.
Probably the Intercontinental, I would have thought.
Uh-huh.
On the basis that it's close. It's the closest place to the UN, and a number of people stay there. So, assuming that Gabby can actually manage to arrange a room, that would be great. But shall we do a call around to see who's on the call so far?
Yep. I got Hong. I got you. Jay. I got. We just joined.
Hi. This is Min Chen.
Hi, Ming Cheng.
Hi.
We're just doing a roll call, Ming Cheng.
I got Ming Cheng, I got Jonathan, Manal, Bertrand, Edmund, Charles, Avery, Kurt, Donna, and myself. Have I missed anybody?
Good morning, this is Heather.
Heather, hi.
Good morning.
Is someone on speaker? Because if someone's on speaker, if you could either come off speaker or mute your phone, that would be really helpful, thank you.
Did I miss somebody?
As long as you got Heather, then no.
Hello? Who just joined? Okay, that's it.
Well, maybe we should give another... we'll wait till another 2 minutes and then we'll start. Okay. In case anybody else joins. Heather, are you coming to the IGF?
I believe so, yeah.
Oh, excellent. So will you be there in time to come to the working group meeting?
I will try.
Oh. How tough can it be? Come on. Not that hard. You've got to fly in the day before anyway.
That's true, but I would have to leave the day before.
Oh yeah, that's tough. But is Gabby joining this call?
Not really.
Okay.
I think because she got in very late last night.
Okay. Are you the call leader?
Yeah.
Can you get the operator and ask the operator to call Yanis?
Yes, I will.
Donna, do you have Yanis's number handy? Donna? I know you're there, Donna. I'm on mute. Well, turn yourself off mute, Donna. Star 6, I think it is.
Yeah.
Oh, she's just... I've got Donna on Messenger. She's going to let me talk to myself. Cow. What's Giannis's number? I've just had an email. Hi, Donna. Oh, here we go. It's Bart, you there?
Yeah.
Plus 33.
Yeah.
6.
6.
8, 5.
8, 5.
Double 3.
3, 3, yeah.
5, 4.
5, 4.
5, 0.
5, 0. So that's plus 3, 3, 6, 8, 5, 3, 3, 5, 4, 5, 0.
Yeah.
Okay. I'll try to get the operator.
Thanks. Cool. Now we have whispering.
Something goes wrong.
Donna, what do you style for the operator? Star 6? Star 0?
0.
Star 0. Star 0, Bart.
Star 6 to mute, star 0 to get the operator.
If you can't get through, Bart, let me know and I'll try. Hello, who's that?
This is Edmund rejoining.
Oh,
I'm actually at an event, so my reception is not very good.
Are you in a bazaar somewhere or something?
No, actually, it's a, how should I say? It's a tiny funeral.
Oh, doesn't sound too great.
But anyway.
Bart, are you there?
Yeah, I'm back.
Have you spoken to the operator?
Yeah, Giannis is
okay. Cool. Hello?
Good morning.
Who's that?
Oh, sorry, Chris. It's Steve Charles. I just found that it went everything silent. I thought I lost the line. I have a new phone, so I'm still learning it.
It's been a while since you and I have been on a call, and you're not used to me being quiet. All right, we'll just wait for Giannis to join and then we'll get started. So, should be any minute now with a bit of luck.
Sure, thank you.
On the call again?
Yep.
Yeah, they tried Giannis, but it goes directly to the voicemail, so it doesn't actually ring at all. So
okay, hold on. So that was... three, three, six, eight. Donna, have you got him on Skype?
He doesn't show up as being logged in on Skype. This is Aubrey.
Hi, Aubrey. Thanks. Okay, that's a bit weird. I'll send him a note now. But
yeah,
go back to the operator and ask them to try again. You'll find...
Chris?
Yeah?
He was going to leave the office soon, so if the operator can just keep trying every 10 minutes...
every 10
minutes. I'm just going to send you a note to say that your phone is going to message bank. We'll try again. And hopefully we'll be... So, but we'll give it a couple of minutes to get the operator to try again.
The operator will try every 10 minutes. So
yeah, who's that just came back?
Sorry?
I thought somebody just came in. Manal dipped out of the call. Okay. Sorry to be a pain.
I'll get the operator again.
Have you got your computer turned on?
Right.
Is your computer on?
Yeah.
So have you got an email from Manal that gives you the telephone number?
Yes, I do.
Okay. So you'll reconnect that? And while you're away, we'll start, yeah?
Yeah, okay, that's fine.
Okay, mate, thank you. Oh, this is fun. Okay. Hi, who's that? No one, okay. All right, let's get
started. This is...
Yes, this is...
Hi, Chris, this is Manel. I got disconnected. I'm back online.
Oh, you're back, okay. Mark, you're still there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay, well, that's encouraging, good. All right, well, let's get going. I sent an email out earlier on to say that what I think we should do on this particular call is to concentrate on the language committee. So what might be useful a bit, at least, is if I
Janusz, how are you doing?
Hi, Janusz, how you doing?
I'm fine, thank you.
Good. We're just starting, so that's great. So we were going to talk about the language committee or whatever we call it. So my summation of where we've got to is this, and this is just where I think we've got to. I've had some feedback from some CCTLD, and Jonathan, I think you were one of them, to express a concern about the language committee having the perception that possibly the language committee might have the right to refuse an application. And the CC feedback has basically been dealt with or satisfied by clarifying that it's not about refusal, that the language committee would only operate in circumstances where the string applied for was not in an official language or was not the long or short form name, and that they would act more in a sort of consultative capacity and talk to the applicant about the string. And my gut feeling, and this is just my gut feeling, is that most of the CCs are probably reasonably okay with it. However, there is significant challenge from some of the government sides who view the, and I'm paraphrasing here, who view the possibility of a committee telling an applicant that is effectively the government that what they have decided, what they think is meaningful as a string for their territory, isn't, and that would not be acceptable. And that's kind of, I think, in a nutshell, where we got to by sort of last week. And that's what prompted my email that I sent out yesterday to try and sort of clarify where we were. So I guess we need to talk about that, and it seems to me that there are three basic alternatives. The first alternative is that you accept the principle of a committee of linguistic experts who, in circumstances where the language or the script does not appear on the UN list, or
where the string applied for does not appear on that list. Confirm, for want of a better term, that the language is official or administrative under the terms of our definition, or that the string is meaningful. That's one possibility. The second possibility is the possibility that I outlined in the email that I sent to the list, which is the thing about going back to basics and saying the only list that exists is that UN geographic list. If you're not on that list, you can't have one, so you have to get on the list in order to get one. And the third possibility is that you say the territory can decide. You have the policy that says it has to be it has to be official language and it has to be meaningful, and the territory itself self-assesses that, makes that decision, and applies for the name, and there is no check of that, there is no confirmation of that. The application is simply made, and it goes to the board. Question whether the board has the right, which I guess logically they do, but officially whether they do or they don't, to actually say no to that. But it seems to me that those are the three alternatives. Does everyone accept that those are the three alternatives, or do people think there are some other alternatives? Okay, well, I'll take it then that everybody accepts that those are the three alternatives. So what we need to do is to figure out which one of those is what we can, what we feel that we can recommend. Without wishing to pick
anything.
Heather.
This is Manal. Just ask a question? Is there any possibility that we have one country? I mean, are we sure the UN list contains all the ISO 3166 plus one countries? Do we have the same number of countries on both lists?
No, Manal, it does not. Very specifically, the UN list does not contain, does not include a number of territories. In my email, I think I've said,
mm-hmm.
to take three examples. It does not include Hong Kong, it does not include Taiwan, and it does not include the European Union. So you would have to, if you were going to use that list as a as your sort of starting point. There are two things that you would. There are two requirements. You would have to allow. You would have to allow for exceptions for territories that are not, that are on the ISO 31661 list, but are not on that UN list. There would have to be an exception for those, because it is almost impossible to get. There is no mechanism in existence for getting a territory added to that list. So you would have to allow for those exceptions, I think. Having said that, what I don't know, and I have been unable to find out so far, is whether there is even a mechanism for getting your language on that list. I don't know if there is an official method by which a government can apply to the United Nations to have, so if you take India as an example, to have a language other than Hindi added to the list as an official language. So there are two challenges with that list. One challenge is that it doesn't include all the territories that are on the 31661 list. And the second challenge is that, as far as I can find out, there is no official mechanism for adding your script or your language to that list. Bart, do you know if that's the case? Or?
No, I'm not sure, but it's a checking the two lists, the ISO list and the UN list. It's the ISO list or the UN list refers back to, say, the administrative languages on the ISO list.
Yeah.
Chris, there is another challenge.
Yes, Yanis.
And another challenge is that the UN list contains the names of countries. We assume that countries would like to put their names, but this may not be the case. In their scripts. For instance, I saw on the list Russia, and
yes.
I doubt, knowing how rational Russians are, that they would go for dot point Russia in Cyrillic. I would rather think that they would apply for dot point RF, which means
Sorry.
Russian Federation in Cyrillic.
Absolutely. In fact, they've said that that's what they want.
So you see, and the list itself is not, let's say, the only answer to problems. We may have a list, we may have a country, but it may appear that country does not want that name which is listed on UN list. So
exactly.
UN list can be a reference, but it should not be considered as the only source of information about the country name.
I agree. Somebody else wanted to speak.
Yeah, Chris, this is Bertrand. I wanted actually to ask a similar question than Manal when she raised.
Yeah.
If I understand correctly, first of all, the fast-track process is basically an enabling process. The purpose is to identify as quickly as possible things that cause no problem.
Yes,
second, correct. The first step in this fast-track process, or what I call the fast lane in the discussions in the last meeting in Delhi, is the identification of the string. So today we're basically trying to identify the strings that cause no problem. In
yes.
that respect, the discrepancy between the UN list and the ISO list goes to the following. It is obvious, apparently, that if one country plus the community in that country with mechanisms to be determined chooses for its IDNCC TLD string in the given language that is in the UN list, it clears probably a certain number of problems.
Yes, that's
second,
right.
If one country in the UN list and the ISO list is choosing another string, just like Yanis correctly mentioned, this can be studied, and if it causes no specific problem or no objection according to a mechanism to be established, this could be handled separately. The main question is, do we know if for basically the countries, or territories in that case, that are on the ISO list, sorry, and who are not on the UN list, I suppose that our fundamental assumption is that if one territory was granted, according to the ISO list, a Roman CCTLD, they are entitled to having an IDN CCTLD
yes.
at least in
yes.
one language. So the
That's
question
correct.
Is to check whether there is an objection to the string they might choose. So
no.
it's obvious that the UN list is an enabling list.
Yeah.
It clears problems when they are in and they choose the language that is in. If
yeah.
the language is not in, or if the territory is not in, or if they choose another string, these are separate issues that can be handled separately. But the cases that are the most delicate are the cases regarding the ones on the ISO list and not on the UN list. And I would be interested to know if there was a listing beyond the few that you mentioned. How many are we talking about?
Well, it's really hard. That's a really hard question to answer. But if you just go on the basis of the, there are a number of territories that are on the ISO list that are not on the UN list because the UN list is limited to members.
I suppose it goes
and
for France in particular. We have a whole bunch of territories.
Yeah, it goes for France in particular. It goes for Macau, Hong Kong, Taiwan. Taiwan, Hong Kong and Macau for different reasons for Taiwan. Taiwan because it chooses not to be a member. It goes for the European Union.
But the European Union was not on the ISO list initially.
No, but it is.
So it's a different, it has been assimilated to a CCTLD.
Well, can I suggest that, yes, I don't want to get stuck into a discussion about the EU right now because that's a very complicated issue.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But nonetheless, it is not on the list.
Mm-hmm.
where we have got to is that if we're going to have a circumstance where we need to deal with subjection. You've used a couple of times used the term objection. I'm making a leap of understanding of where I think this working group has got to. But my basic understanding from the various discussions we had, and including a discussion that we had in some detail last week about the possibility of objection mechanism, is that there is a significant degree of discomfort amongst, I would suggest, the majority of the members of this working group, that any objection from outside the territory can be made. Now, Ambotron, you haven't been on a number of the calls, so you haven't been. Is somebody in a station, or in the marketplace, or... Because if you are, could you press star 6 and put yourself on mute, please? Oh, there is a dog. Thanks. Very good. So whoever it was who just pressed star 6 and put themselves on mute, if you want to come back into the conversation again, you just have to press star 6 again. And then when you speak, we'll know who it was. So, the discussion on an objection process is a separate discussion. But I don't want to get, it's really important we don't get sidetracked. What I want to do is to talk about the third possibility, which is the possibility that we simply say, here is the requirement. The language must be official by our definition, which allows for it to be administrative and to be just for the government to say that it's administrative language. And the string must be meaningful. And what we do is we say, if an application is made, endorsed by the government of a particular territory, that says the language is official and the string is meaningful, that should be acceptable and there should be no checking of that, it should just be accepted. Now that, as I understand it, is the suggested position from a number of governments, including, and I'm picking on you, Heather, because as far as I know, you're the only one on the call.
Mm-hmm.
But that's kind of where you're leaning towards. Is that right? Heather, are you there? Hello?
A lot of background noise anyway.
Yeah, there's a huge amount of background noise again. If anyone is on speaker, please press star 6. Otherwise, it's going to be impossible for us to have this call. I can hear footsteps in the background. I can hear all sorts of things. It's gone quiet. Oh, good. Heather, are you there?
Yes, but I only heard the beginning of your sentence. So
what I was saying, Heather, was that what I was saying was the third alternative, which is that we say the following. We say... Now, I've still got background noise, and I... I can hear footsteps in the background, I can hear all things. Okay. Maybe now.
Can the operator know which line is going with this disturbance that we use?
Okay. I think we're okay now. Heather, I'm sorry. I was talking about the possibility of saying if an application comes in and it's confirmed by the government that the language is official or administrative language, and the application is for a particular string and it's either from the government or supported by the government, and that they say that it is meaningful in accordance with the definition that we've put in the methodology, that should be enough and it shouldn't be necessary to check it. And there shouldn't be a committee that looks at it, that it is in fact meaningful if that's what the government says. Is that basically
what you think
okay,
you're leaning towards as a position.
Yeah, that's probably fair to that's the principle that I'm
Okay. Can I ask, and again, I'm really conscious of trying not, I don't want to put you on the spot, but I need to use you as a sounding board to have this discussion, because otherwise we're not going to get anywhere.
Chris Janis, yeah.
Chris Janis.
With this situation.
Janis, I can't hear you. You're disappearing. Hello? Hello? Sorry, Janis, are you still there? Can anyone? He's gone, I think.
Yeah, it is, say, the background noise is caused by Janis' line.
Oh, okay.
So, can you hear me now?
Yeah. Yes, Janis, we can hear
okay.
you.
Okay. I apologize for background noise. I the first time I learned how to use pound six, so I will be star six. I will be doing it now more frequently.
Okay.
What I want to say is the following. I don't feel comfortable with this absolute sovereignty. Nothing is absolute in this world. So we may face situation where governments are taking a very serious approach. They're consulting, they're doing research, they come up with an absolutely reasonable suggestion.
Mm-hmm.
So that's fine, but we may face also a situation where one sovereign government wants to put the name of sovereign in the and to put it in internet forever, so, and that is not reasonable. And we need to have some way how to prevent this from happening, number one. Number two, how to make ICANN board informed about this situation. If ICANN board, who does not manage many languages, and nothing bad, I'm just saying there are people speaking English, French, Russian, maybe Arabic, but nothing else. So they may receive information from the government that the name is, or the string is reasonable, and it is not. So there should be some kind of mechanism which advises board saying, from linguistic point of view, from a semantic point of view, things are absolutely perfect, you can go ahead. So, or somebody who says, board, be careful, what is there means that and that, because that's simply natural. The board would need to know what is proposed.
Yes.
And from this perspective, the language committee, or whatever we call it, would be reasonable. And if the only problem is to have the only problem is in the name, we can rename it. We cannot call. We may use instead of language committee, as I suggested yesterday, pool of experts, which would be called by the board to make their judgment and giving advice to the board.
Understood.
So now I'm going mute again.
Yeah. Which brings me to, which is, thank you, Janis, and that brings me to the question that I was heading towards. Which I think is this, and again, Heather, I just want to say I'm not picking on you. It's just you, as I said before, I need a sounding board to try and work this out. If we did that, if we said it's just an application, and the string comes from the government, or the endorsed by the government as under the usual IANA rules, and whatever they say, we say this is how it should be, and whatever they put in is, if they say it is, that is how it is, then it is. Heather, would you suggest that the board should simply be accepting of that, or would you accept a circumstance where the board had the right to say, well, actually, we're not sure, and we want to go and get someone to tell us that that's okay? In other words, what I'm asking you is there a difference between having a check on it at the beginning of the process and having the board actually say, once the application is in, does this meet our requirements?
or do you view those two things as exactly the same and both therefore unacceptable?
I don't have an answer, I'm afraid.
Right.
It's something I need to think on.
Okay.
Is it really loud, or could you hear me?
No, I can't. Hello?
Hello?
can't hear you.
Sorry,
can't hear you.
Is this better?
Yeah.
Is this better?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. I think I just want to add something to this, Edmund. Sorry about all the noise. In addition to, I guess, what you said, I think we need to look at it in a way where it says that not the board, after seeking whatever advice, is rejecting the application, but they're seeking advice to see whether the application should be deferred to the longer-term process, to the PDP, rather than rejecting it. I mean, it's a very it seems like a wording issue, but it's...
No,
I think it's significant difference.
No, you're absolutely right, it's significant. But I agree with you, it's totally significant. But the practical result of it is that your territory fast-track application, if you like, doesn't proceed. So, Heather, I'm not... So, thank you. I agree with you, Evan. You're quite right. Heather, I'm not pushing you for an answer at all. I'm just trying to tease out, and I understand that you don't have one, so I'm just trying to tease out some discussion points here. I guess what I'm saying is this. This working group could simply say, here's the methodology that we suggest. Here is what we think a string should be, and make no recommendations whatsoever about the logistics of how you deal with that, and simply say a string should be meaningful within the definition of meaningful, the language should be official within the definition of official, neither of which I think are particularly contentious in this working group, and then leave it to the logistics of the staff and the board to figure out how that is dealt with. My question is whether or not we actually want to do that, because it seems to me, and I put I made this point in my email from my personal point of view, but then I accept and acknowledge that I'm not government. I would far rather deal with all of that stuff up front, early on, rather than actually go through the process of putting together everything and then have it disappear into a black hole because four or five members of the board say, but actually this is the name of the king or the name of the president or the name of the whatever, as Yanis has used as an example, and isn't the name of the territory, and therefore it's not meaningful. So I guess what we need to try and decide as a working group is, unless we all have to accept that every decision does need to be endorsed by the board. And I think we also need to accept, and if I'm wrong about this, then please tell me, we need to accept that if we put a mechanism in place that says there's a definition of meaningful and there's a definition of language, then the board obviously is going to want to look at that and say, yes, it meets that definition, in the same way that if we say you have to be technically competent, then the board is going to want to be satisfied that you are technically competent. So it seems to me that the only question we have to decide is whether we put in place a mechanism that allows for a check on that early on in the process, or whether we simply say, this is what needs to happen, and then leave it to the board to sort it out. And if the board decides to go away and get expert advice, that's for them. And if they don't, they don't.
Friends?
Yeah.
This is Beth. I am. If I understand well what Heather was mentioning, we have to be careful not to push the balance in the complete extreme other direction, than the one that was used in the first place to establish CCTLDs. And here I'm making a very, very strong distinction, as I always do, between the identification of the string and the delegation process. As far as I'm concerned, I believe we're dealing at this moment mainly about the string, and the delegation is, in my view, a separate process.
Yeah,
if I look at the
string.
If I look at the way it was done before the inception of ICANN, governments have had no say, basically, in the choice of the string because the ISO list was chosen. What we're discussing now is somehow going in the complete other direction of sovereignty, where somehow any government and the actors that he is in relation with would be solely deciding on what the string should be in what language, what script, or whatever. And I fully concur with Yanis here that there are potential dangers.
Yeah.
I've always been of the view that sovereignty in its full exercise goes with responsibilities. And in that case, what we are doing is not something that is purely an absolute sovereignty issue, because it is embedded into an international system. So there is a responsibility for any actor in choosing the string to make it interoperable, coherent with the global naming system or whatever. The risk that we're running at the moment is either to overburden the board with decisions or to try to preview in a very heavy procedure every case that might happen. And I think that in this respect, the notion that we have a range, there is a range of reference that actors can pick on to justify the reason why they picked the string. And the more elements create a convergence of justifications, the more easy the thing will go through. The only element that we need to have is a process that basically allows actors to say, this is the string we are thinking about in that respect, in that script, and this is why we chose it. And now the key question is to see whether there is some element that goes in there to verify that it raises no concern. Whatever we do it, unless we go to the full sovereign direction, and I agree with Yanis that it causes problem, there is a need to bring something to check this. The problem, and that's my last point, the more it becomes an ICANN process, meaning a staff or a board thing, the more I believe governments will resent it. The more it is a sort of inter-discussion where issues are raised and are solved on an individual basis, the more it might be acceptable by governments.
I agree with that, and that was why we originally cast the concept of a language committee or a committee of linguistic experts as being independent and not being an ICANN committee and not being anything to do with IANA, but simply being a standing committee of
advisory committee.
Of three or four linguistic experts who could themselves. So this is just to give you an example.
Mm-hmm.
Let's say that you had three or four people on the committee who were linguistic experts, but they're obviously not going to be linguistic experts in all languages. But what they would be able to do is to go to specific each time where there was an application that was outside of the automatic tick, the automatic tick being you're obviously on the ISO list. You're on the ISO list. What your language is listed in the UN list, and what you're applying for is the long form or short form name on the UN list or a part of that name. Anything outside of that would go to them. If they would be able to go to experts in the particular language, simply seek confirmation that particular string was meaningful as the name of the territory. An example that's used, and it's very unfair, but it's the example that's used. Well, there were two. One is a territory where a language is official, no problem there, but the application for the string that they've chosen is actually the name of the president. rather than the name of the territory. That's one example. And the second example we've used, which is a far more, perhaps a far more challenging one, is that is Macedonia, where you have a circumstance where the name of the name of the territory in the UN list is the former Yugoslav Republic of Macedonia. There is no short form name. There is only that name. And you need to be able to have a circumstance where an application for the string Macedonia can be deemed to not be meaningful because it is not, you know, it doesn't actually describe the territory.
Which actually shows that even the UN list is not in itself an absolute reference enough. Which goes to the net of parameters. The point I'm making.
Correct. Yes, you're right. Sorry, I know I'm interrupting you. But you're absolutely correct. An application for Macedonia should not be able to go through the fast track.
And so the point is the committee. I have one question because so far I'm not clear on that point, but it might have been discussed when I was not there. When an actor, a government, or another applicant checked by the government is submitting a string, is it going to be publicly listed, or does it go only to whatever committee that checks on its own? If it is publicly listed, then comments can be brought to the attention of whatever committee or advisory committee is put in place, and then refereed. The committee can say, well, this is the list of strings that we have received. As far as we're concerned, we check this, this, and that, and there are concerns about this.
But we're in danger of getting sidetracked here because what we're doing is drilling down into what the committee might do, and what we haven't yet done is actually establish the fact that we can even agree that there should be one.
I think the two are linked.
Well,
because if the committee has an authority, then you get...
never intended to have an authority. What it was intended to be was a circumstance where the committee would be able to look at the string and effectively... This is really hard to put to draft in words, but this was the intention. The current circumstance is this. If a territory puts in an application for a redelegation, IANA looks at it and basically goes back to them and says, it's not going to work. This is what you need to do to fix it. And they send them away. It's not public. It's not something that anyone knows about. It just happens. And the only time it ever, generally speaking, the only time it ever becomes public is if the country itself or the territory itself gets so annoyed with the way that IANA is dealing with it that they start talking to other people about it. But IANA never does. And basically, it's kept as a discussion between the two, and they are told to go away and sort it out. The sort of thing that we originally envisaged was that the territory would put in an application for a string that was the name of the president, and there would be some mechanism by which someone, and for the sake of this discussion, let's call it a language committee, was able to go back to the territory and say, you know, this is really not acceptable. This doesn't work within what we have defined as meaning, as being meaningful. You really should go away and rethink this. So no refusal of applications, no rudeness, nothing public, but just a sort of ability to ensure that that the agreed definitions are adhered to. And the brick wall we have run up against, and I understand completely why, is that governments are saying no, because that means that where a sovereign government has said, we understand the rules, we have decided that this is meaningful, therefore it is, that should be it.
Yeah,
and that's the challenge we're trying to deal with here.
Then it doesn't fly, period. I mean, we don't even need to discuss it further. If this is a basic, and I'm speaking almost in an official position in there. I have to check back on this very specific thing. But I can really say that the position I'm making here is not about the position of me as an official. It's about the viability of the system. If the system is based on the absolute principle of sovereignty, it simply will never be established. That's my feeling, and I'm speaking very frankly.
Oh,
I might
I
be
understand.
Wrong.
Mm-hmm.
It simply won't work.
Okay. So does
am I wrong, or
well,
is it hilarious?
Let's find out. Does anyone else want to respond to Bertrand, preferably, or at least, hopefully, somebody from a government perspective, to respond to Bertrand's point? No.
Okay. I think Yanis has made the point that it cannot fly on the simple basis of any government saying this is the spring period. That's exactly what his position was. I'm expressing it a little less diplomatically,
but I
think it's the same thing.
Well, at the risk of me, once again hogging the whole of the call, I have said in a previous email to the list that it seems to me that I think actually I said it in some comments that I made on some input from Bill D from the European Union. I think we need to get really clear about what this sovereignty thing actually means. My understanding of sovereignty has been once I get my CCTLD, it's sovereign.
Mm-hmm.
That's different to me saying I can have whatever I want.
I would agree.
Because I'm sovereign. Mm-hmm. There's a difference. So once I get it, then I've got it, and I can do whatever I like with it. As long as I accept that, you know, I'm security, stability, all the usual stuff that goes along with that. But to be suggesting, it seems to me, to be suggesting that I am so sovereign that I can simply decide I want dot whatever, simply doesn't work. Because...
Chris, may I... Sorry, I don't want to interrupt you, but I might have one precision here. The reality today is that this exception of sovereignty is implementable immediately. Any country can establish a string, set up a server, and go on its own. What we're discussing here is not the establishment of a country code domain name. What we're talking about is its insertion in the global system, which is the root. There's nowhere anything that says a sovereign country has an absolute right to be inserted in the root, in the string it wants. I mean, sorry, nowhere it doesn't exist, period.
Mm.
And no country can claim that.
Yeah.
Am I wrong?
I don't know. I'm really...
I mean, I'm blunt, but sometimes we're...
Yeah. Heather, is there any way I can persuade you to enter this debate? Hello.
Can you hear me? I think you thought. I'm just listening.
Well,
nothing against you either.
No, and don't get me wrong. I've never used the S word.
No, I know you haven't. I know you haven't.
In any of my remarks, and I mean, from my point of view, it's really about getting at those practicalities so that this does work.
Yeah.
You know, I do want this to be workable.
Well, can I be... Well, I thank you, and I understand that. And
Chris,
since we're...
This is Bart. I think that what there is another circumstance that needs to be taken into consideration as well. If the case where governments say knowingly and willingly, I'm not involved in the process.
Yeah. Can you just sort of expand on that a bit? I'm not sure I understand what you're talking about.
Say we assume, we all assume, say, in the work we do, that governments are participating. But, say, by choice, a government could say, in some cases, there are some examples, say, from the past, governments are not involved, knowingly.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And in that case, say, the whole sovereignty discussion, put it this way, takes on a complete different, or is not at stake, and say the mechanism we're talking about, I don't know if it should deal with it, but it, say from where we're heading, I think it should deal with circumstances like this as well.
Yeah.
Chris, sure.
Yes, Janice.
I would like to support what Belfond said, and I think that this is a very valid argument. We're not speaking here about the question of sovereignty or not undermining sovereignty of each country, but indeed this is the part of the global system, and there should be a rule, and we everybody should follow these rules. So this is not a jungle. And I think that this argument is very, very valid.
Okay, thank you. I guess I really don't. The problem we have is that I can't figure out a way of bringing this to some sort of conclusion, because it seems to me that that sounded fun. To be blunt and completely politically incorrect, there's been a deal of feedback from some governments or representatives of governments that is based on the quite understandable desire for that particular government or territory to achieve what it is that they've decided that they want. And frankly, that isn't going to help us reach an acceptable methodology to move forwards with, because if we simply say, we'll develop a method to give everybody what they want, then we might as well ignore any form of policy at all and simply just have a free-for-all. And as an example of that, and again, I just want to make it clear that I'm not picking on any particular territory here, when we originally started this discussion, one of the reasons why we've shaped the methodology the way that we have, which includes a principle that it's the criteria that should set the number of IDN, CCTLDs that a territory can have, is because at the very beginning of this process, we were persuaded that a number of territories, including the most obvious one, India, would find it unpalatable and impossible to have a circumstance where they were only allowed to have a fast-track IDN CCTLD in Hindi, that being the only official language listed in any database anywhere. So we find ourselves in a situation where we are required, on the one hand, to be flexible to allow for the political realities of the world, but on the other hand, we appear to be being it appears to be impossible for us to actually come up with a mechanism that allows for any form of restraint to be put in place on what a territory chooses. And frankly, I don't see a way forward with that in a fast-track approach. So, I mean, basically, I throw it open to anyone to talk about it, because I've got no idea how to take this any further. Who is that?
This is Aubrey. I just wanted to make one comment, if I can. And that's that I'm not sure to what degree this will matter in the end, but I think that there'll be difficulty getting a community consent to a fast-track process also without having resolved this particular conundrum. I think it'll be difficult. This is just my guess, but I think it'll be difficult to get community support for a fast-track that doesn't include some set of rules and policies without predetermining, you know, what I think those rules should be.
I
think that's important.
Thank you. I agree with that.
Chris, I think that there is one element that we have to take into account, and this is so far the introduction of new strings in the root have proven to be very difficult and lengthy process, and there is a fear that if you will not get in the fast track, you will not get your IDN string at all.
Yeah.
So if we can find a way how to reassure that the fast track is not the end, and the things would go smoothly simply because that is about countries, that is not about something else. So then maybe many governments would feel much more comfortable with the proposed approach, and would accept this set of basic rules to start with. But I think that this is sort of grab and run approach. So we need to find a way how to reassure that with the CCTLDs, with IDN CCTLDs, this will not be like with the new GTLDs has been so far.
So what are you actually suggesting that we do?
I am suggesting that we should not put the white flag, and we should keep explaining the basic concept and try to produce the results and recommendations for the board by June.
No, I think I agree with that, Yannis. I'm just asking, what I'm saying is that I don't know, I can't figure out a way, I don't want to abandon this. I mean, we've all invested far too much time in it, but I can't at the moment see a way forward. We've got the GAC. We've got all sorts of fiddly little problems on the side that I know we can deal with. There's no problem with dealing with a whole heap of stuff. But this particular thing about ensuring that the string meets the definitional requirements. I don't even think the definitional requirements themselves are an issue. It's just how do you make sure that the string meets the definitional requirements? I've got pushback from a significant governmental quarter that's not going to be acceptable. Now I don't know, because I'm not in the GAC, and it's the GAC that will eventually come to terms on this. But we've had, again, I'm not choosing to pick on anybody here, but we've had the US or Suzanne saying that she doesn't think it's acceptable. Heather said she doesn't think it's acceptable. India has said they don't think it's acceptable. I don't know where to go with this, and I don't know how to take this any further forward. So I guess I'm seeking guidance from the working group on how we actually proceed with this issue. Because if we don't get to, if we can't solve this, then we can't come up with a recommendation. So I just want some help with this. I don't know how to take it any
no,
further forward.
No, first of all, GAC has not discussed yet this issue as a GAC, and I'm planning to suggest the call on 20th May to go through point by point of on all the issues which seems to be contentious so far. So again, I think that there is simply for the time being, I think that there is a simply misunderstanding of the role of language committee. I think that we have not be able to explain what we mean by that, and I think that today's discussion brings us a little bit forward in explaining that language committee. First of all, I mean maybe we should start by saying what language committee will not do. That will be helpful, and so we would say that language committee will do job behind the scenes, not to embarrass anybody. And not or to prevent situation when board would need to take a negative decision on one country application. So I think that this is maybe also the way how to explain that the language committee would work with applicant to make sure that board at the end will not give a negative opinion or. Let's say government of U.S. would need to turn down request of the board to put thing in the string, in the root. So we simply need to keep talking and persuading, or maybe putting it more simple terms, what committee would do and what committee would not do, and that would be helpful. And simply we still have time. We have 2 months to go.
Yeah. Okay, so are you suggesting that we should do that, and at the same time move on to other things that we need to deal with
while we're still considering that.
This is one way to proceed, to put to say that here is a concept, there is disagreement, there are arguments in favor, arguments against. Let's think about it. Put that aside, and then at the end, when all package will be more or less ready, so we will see what might be the compromise or ultimate solution.
Okay.
But to work in parallel, Cheryl here, to work
oh,
in parallel.
Oh, hi, Cheryl. How are you?
I have been here the whole time. You just didn't let me get a word in.
Of course you have, darling.
Yeah, I know.
Chris, and this is Bart, I think is if you look at, again, say, the arguments of last call on this committee and the arguments, again, for this call, is that we leave it now and that we redraft something and, excuse me, put a bit more, say, the whole process in place and clarify this, what its role should be, say, and maybe do some backtracking with starting with the board decision and moving backwards.
Okay.
Because that would clarify it, because if you look at the methodology itself, it's just one or two sentences.
I agree. All right. Well, in that case, then, thank you, Bart, and thank you, Yanis, for that. I think let's
Chris,
move on. Yeah?
Yeah, this is Bertrand. Listening to the last discussions, I wonder if the main concern, and correct me if I'm wrong, the main concerns that governments will, and I would say in that case, legitimately have, is if they have the feeling that whatever group or committee is put in place to prevent them from doing something. If you present, and if we present, the whole approach in the opposite way, which is fundamentally the fast lane or the fast track has the purpose of facilitating the introduction of IDEA and CCTLDs in the ICANN managed route, and the purpose is to address the most pressing needs and facilitate the identification of the non-controversial strengths. This would allow them to say the purpose is to identify the suggested strengths that are submitted in the, for instance, the existing script that has been identified in the DOT test. I know that there is no technical relevance to that, and I said to Tina that it should be interesting to add, just for policy presentation, to add other scripts to display the enhancement of the 11 scripts so far. But the first step is to identify suggested strengths. What about the IDN working group itself, contacting or inviting the different actors, including governments, to submit the strengths that they would like to see as a priority on the basis of one string in one script for each territory in the ISO list, with possible exceptions if governments really insist that they want to have two or three, whatever. Then the IDN CCTLD working group itself would collate those submissions and basically make the table that we discussed in New Delhi, with suggesting a range of criteria or references that the different applicants or the governments can mention as being relevant to their string, like, you see, this is a string that is in the list of the UN. It is in our script. It is this and that. Then the IDN CCTLD working group would make the list of the submitted script.
Yeah.
And then the question is, should it make, and I would be in favor of that, should it make it public during a period of comments for actors to mention that there seems to be a concern here or there? And then whatever group is established, either the group, the working group itself, or another group, says basically after this period of comment, it seems that those strings are non-controversial. And then the group is not restricting government, it is facilitating their work.
I think I understand what you're saying. I think I understand, but
But can I ask you that to, can I ask that you actually send, that you put that down into a
Yeah, I intended to do so, but I wanted to...
And send it to the list with as a suggestion for a way forwards, because it's quite a long and complicated step-by-step process, and I'd like to actually, you know, is that it, the English and all that sort of stuff.
Sure.
It would be good to see that actually in writing.
But the fundamental difference is, and it, I think it's important for governments, and in that respect, this discussion was very useful for me. The basic point is, what is the role of whatever committee? If it is a committee that is perceived by government as something that will say, no, you can't, then it's a problem. If it is something that says, obviously, it is helping you going faster because you did it so well that nobody's objecting to anything, then there's no threat to sovereignty in whatever respect, if we keep that S word.
Fair enough.
Can I ask a question?
Yeah, right.
Hang on. One step. It's Avery, yes, I've got you. Who else wanted to say something?
Yellen here?
Helen, sorry. Who was that, Heather?
Yellen here? No, this is Yellen.
Oh, Yellen, hello. So we've got Yellen and Yanis. So we have Avery, Yellen, and Yanis. Okay, Avery first.
Okay, yeah, mine is just a question that perhaps this is while Bertrand is writing it up, is to also look at whether doing something like that is properly within the defined scope of this working group. And if it isn't, then what one needs to do, because it does seem to be moving at least slightly from the goal of assessing a method to actually presenting candidate strength. Now, that may be okay, but I do think that needs to be addressed in what's written up.
Thank you, Avery. Good point. Okay, Yellen.
I would just like to point out that the fact check is an ongoing process. It is not going to be done all at once. And so if we try to get together all the suggestions at once and then try to do, try to follow Bertrand's suggestions, we might have to do this a couple of times.
Sure. Yep, understood that. Yes.
Sorry, I didn't understand the last part of the sentence.
Yellen was saying that if we were to follow your complete suggestion, that would probably need to be an ongoing process on the basis that, given that we've accepted, I think it's generally accepted that there's consensus that the fast track should be an ongoing process until such time as the full policy is developed, that there are some territories that may not be ready to tell us now what they want, but that needs to be a mechanism to enable them to provide that information at a later stage.
Okay. There was a third comment, but I can comment on both Avery and this one.
That's fine. And Yanis?
I'm not looking for extra job for this working group, and I think that this is not the task of the working group to work out the names of the string.
Yeah.
I would rather than, I mean, if we're really stuck and if we cannot agree on language committee, then at the end this is Ayana staff which will be in charge of preparing dossier for the decision of the board. So and then we can ask Ayana staff work together with potential applicants during the application period to make sure that the proposal is meaningful, and let's say to warn the board if something in their opinion is not going well or something like that. So because at the end the ultimate decision will belong to the board, and Ayana will be preparing and then implementing that, and that is their job. They are paid for that. I mean, Ayana people are paid for that. So, and then of course, since they don't speak all languages of the world, they don't know any all scripts of the world, what they will do naturally, they will consult those people who know different scripts. So, and they would do it anyway, because each who gets money for the job wants to be sure that what he puts forward is correct.
Yes.
So, if we cannot agree on language committee, then maybe we simply need to abandon this idea, and this consultative process will take place anyway.
At a later stage in the process, effectively.
Yes.
Yes, yes. Okay, Bertrand, I don't want to go into it, if you don't mind, going into more detail on your...
No, it's not. Actually, it was just a quick answer to the two points that have been raised, if you don't mind.
Go ahead.
Yeah. No, the first thing is that it is obvious it's an ongoing process. I've always been arguing in favor of not getting in rounds. So the kind of table that that I was mentioning would be absolutely sealed on an ongoing process, but with period for each submitted string. The second thing, I think Avery is right. The question of whether it could be the task or not of the IDN working group to handle this list, I think she's right asking the question. One of the solutions could be that the group suggests this methodology, for instance, at the Paris meeting, and then the community or the board, or I don't know whether it's the procedure, would be saying, yes, let's move forward. I don't know what the deadlines are, but that's a key point. The last point is that the whole thing about the expertise and tapping into the expertise, and particularly linguistic one, there is always a choice between tapping into a specific expert group that can work behind closed doors somehow and quietly on applications, or using a more distributed expertise by making public the applications. And I suppose that it will iron out probably more easily by making public the list of applications, as we're only talking about strings, the very cases like the name of the president and so on, because somebody will say, no, we cannot go public before it is applied. Whereas on a private thing, I might think, and I think IANA actually is even less acceptable to governments and the ones who are critical than any other procedure, but maybe I'm wrong.
Okay, thank you. Before we move on, does anyone have anything else that they want to add to this discussion at this point? Bertrand's going to go away. Yep.
Yeah, I'm here. Again, commenting Bertrand's proposal. I'm not sure that this is the right way. So this is a not community thing. I mean, this is like a children in the family. So there are two parents, and parents decide what name children will have, and in this case, one parent would be the territory or government, and another would be IANA or ICANN. So they among themselves decide what would be based on their best knowledge of situation and what they want. So and we're not asking neighbors, we're not asking anybody else what your string would be, and in some case this would be also against Visis principle. So governments and ICANN, yes, governments, other governments, community in general, I'm not that sure.
Okay, that's being a way to put it, right? I can see the argument.
Well, so Bertrand, you can basically work on a note to the working group suggesting, setting out what it is that you suggest. But I think at this point we should move on. I wanted to, because Edmund and I, because you're on the call, I'm assuming you are still on the call. Edmund?
Yep, I'm still on the call.
Yeah, well done. Star 6 again, Edmund. Thank you. I wanted to deal with the outstanding point on an objection mechanism. I wanted to, because you weren't on a call last week, some of us were, and I want to stress that this is my assessment of where I think we've got to, and I'm more than happy to accept that I've misunderstood, but if anyone wants to speak up. But we canvassed last week on the call, Edmund, at some length, the possibility of perhaps we could call it an outside objection process. In other words, allowing for objections from from outside of the territory as opposed to objections from within the territory, and I would suggest that the general consensus of the working group from the call last week and all of the input we've had so far is that that would generally not be acceptable to governments and would not be acceptable to the CC community, on the basis that whilst it's perfectly acceptable for the local internet community in Australia to object to a suggested string designating Australia in Greek, for example, it's not acceptable for the community in Indonesia or Greece, for that matter, to object to such a designation. And therefore, as long as there are some rules in place that say that the string has to be meaningful and that the string has to be in a language that is official within the definition, it wouldn't be acceptable for there to be an outside objection process. So, Edmund, I'm happy
I apologize for not being able to be on the call last week, but I think it was mentioned a couple of times, and it's consistent with the thinking that I have. I don't disagree with what you have described, but it does not take away from the possibility of incorporating a suggestion for some sort of a committee, whether it's a linguistic expert or whatever you call it, to solicit additional feedback, to solicit additional input from a broader group of people. So that's really what I'm driving at, not necessarily, an open sort of objection mechanism, which I think somewhat got, I guess that was the original intent of the initial report, but I think the whole discussion really shaped it into a direction whereby we can sue a committee given certain guidelines or given certain parameters, then solicit a wider feedback from a defined group rather than not necessarily defined, sorry about that, from a defined group of people whereby that additional feedback, whether a TLD is appropriate, could be sought.
Edmund, it has never, ever, ever been intended that either the language committee in any form we've ever suggested or the technical committee in any form we've ever suggested would seek feedback from anywhere at all.
But we have discussed a few times in this particular call that the language community or the expertise, they might not know, all the languages, seek additional input.
I know. There's a massive difference between saying they would seek additional input and saying that in a circumstance where they needed to have specific linguistic input from an expert in the language to confirm that the string is meaningful within the definition, they would be able to do that. That is not the same as suggesting that there would be outside input into the choice of string. There is a significant and in fact fundamental difference, because if you think it's going to be tough to get some sort of agreement that we can allow a committee of linguistic experts to look at a string and suggest whether it's meaningful or not, to suggest that you would then effectively allow, quote, public comment, unquote, on that string, it's just going to be so far outside of what governments
Again, I think the characterization, you know, it needs to be changed. I mean, the characterization you put, and actually, I think we're supposed to be on the same page. I think we're just, you know, arguing about the mechanism for which, eventually how the board seeks advice, whether it's
give me an example of how that would look then.
Well, I don't think we are at the point of discussing how it would look. We're at the point of discussing whether the expert group would be given the opportunity to seek further input.
No, we're talking about what we have said so far, and this is not even close to being agreed yet. But what we've said so far.
Sure.
If there was a committee of linguistic experts,
mm-hmm.
they would, in circumstances where they felt the need to consult an outside linguistic expert, who was an expert in a particular language, to answer a very restricted question or set of questions, which is, does the string meet the requirements of the definition, that they would be entitled to do that. So, to take a very specific case, if you had a committee of three linguistic experts, none of whom were actually experts in Japanese,
mm-hmm.
and perhaps Korean's a better example. Experts in Korean, and Korea put in a string, obviously in Korean, then they would quite clearly be able to go to a Korean linguistic expert and say, or a number perhaps of Korean linguistic experts, and say, can you confirm to us that this is in fact meaningful within the definition? That is all we have been talking about. Now, if you mean something else other than that, then I'm asking you to explain what it is that you mean other than that.
Well, in a case, let's say hypothetically, the experts go to two experts in Korean, and the response is, you know, two different responses. Do they then seek further opinion?
But that would be a matter for them, wouldn't it?
Sorry?
They might, but that would be a matter for them.
That would be a matter, sorry.
Well, they would decide what to do.
Right, but they could also potentially decide to seek further interest.
From where?
That's part of the discussion, whether, you know, how that mechanism could...
No, it's not part of the discussion. It's very specific, and this is why I'm pushing you on this, because we have to get really clear on this, because it's the only way we're ever going to get any agreement on it. No, this is a committee of linguistic experts. The only people from whom they are ever going to seek input is other linguistic experts. Not anyone else. Does that make sense?
Makes sense.
It generally makes sense, and as I mentioned, we're on the same page in that.
But what I'm saying to you, Edmund, is that does not encompass what you have previously described as an objection procedure.
I understand that, and that's the area where. I don't think I'm in a position to really, you know, resolve that issue at this point, because I think it really depends on how both the technical committee and the linguistic committee is formed and their functions, because you know you can't look at it, you must look at it as a whole, you know, in terms of a whole solution. Rather than, you know, take this out and say, you know, this is out of the question at all, right? I mean, that's really my point.
I'm sorry, but I don't understand what in practical terms what that actually means.
It means that without understanding the whole process for which the technical committee and the linguistic committee would be operating, it is very difficult to see, you know, difficult to make a suggestion whether a form of broader input would actually benefit the whole process.
Okay, well, so I can answer that in two ways. The first, the first answer is that the current document goes some way to making it clear what the roles of those two committees are. In the case of a linguistic committee, it is a very specific role to confirm that the string meets the definition of official language and meaningfulness. And in the case of the technical committee, it's a very specific role to confirm that the string does not breach, interfere with, impinge upon, or whatever the IDNA guidelines and protocols. There is currently no requirement or suggestion in the document that there would be any wider consultation whatsoever.
This is Aubrey. Can I interject something on that point?
Yes, of course you can.
Okay, thanks. Well, I wasn't sure whether it was in the right time. And in some ways, I might be blunter than I usually try to be on this one.
I'll go on.
Okay? Which might be a terrible thing. But anyway, it strikes me that whether we put, or rather whether you all put a structured objection process within your document or not, there is objection process.
Absolutely.
In other words, the public comment, because I'm sure that we're not going to change ICANN to the point of these things going to the board in secret. So what we're really deciding is that we don't want to have a structured objection process with rules that the board could then point to and say, yep, they went through objections, they followed their rules,
exactly.
Everything, everybody was heard from, everyone was listened, let's go. What they're saying is, people were never really given a chance to comment before. We really got to listen to all these crazies now because, you know, they never had a voice before. And so I think that we have to accept that there is an objection process. It's the decision that this committee has or this working group has is whether you want to structure and control that process or whether you want it to be the triple X free-for-all.
Well, you thought, yes and no. I agree with you. I agree that there is an objection process, simply on the basis that when a resolution is put to the board, or prior to a resolution being put to the board, there is the ability to object. But currently, in respect to the delegation of CCTLDs, there is no comment period.
But Chris, we're not talking about delegation yet.
Yes,
we are. We're talking about.
Yes, we are.
I don't know. I'm sorry to come back to this. This process of fast track has the great benefit of being able to distinguish the steps. And I think that a lot of people misunderstand the incredibly powerful political benefit of allowing a country to basically say, my string has been accepted, and now we're getting into the process of defining the delegation method and so on.
No, Bertrand, no, I actually don't agree with you. I don't. The situation is simply this. That we are putting in place a mechanism that enables a territory to fast track to a delegation of an IDN CCTLD. There are mechanisms, RFC 1591 or ICP1, whichever one you choose to rely on, has a series of mechanisms that deal with what needs to be done in territory in order for the delegation of a CCTLD or the redelegation of a CCTLD to occur. Those include checks and balances within the territory, but there is no comment period in respect to the issue. And the reason there isn't is because there's never been a situation where the string itself has been in contention because the string is pre-designated.
This is why the whole debate is about the string at the moment.
I absolutely agree. Now,
so let's deal with the string only.
Sure. Now, the whole point about the fast-track mechanism, certainly from my point of view,
mm-hmm.
has been to build a mechanism that means that there really can be no argument. In other words, it is the name of the territory, or it is a perfectly acceptable part name of the territory. And the example that I have consistently used, albeit it's in English and ASCII, is the United States of America. There is no way they could have dot United. There is no way they could have dot States. And in fact, there's no way they could have dot America. But what they could have is dot USA or
mm-hmm.
dot United States of America.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if you can create a mechanism that enables those things to occur completely non-contentiously, then that's fine. And the moment a contention comes up, then it automatically comes outside of the fast track.
Yes.
But the problem is that by even suggesting that another TLD or another sovereign government or another, or an organization, or a company, or anybody, for that matter,
mm-hmm.
should be able to raise an objection to what another territory has suggested is a TLD. So I'm not talking about it doesn't fit within the rules. I'm just saying we object. You have a major problem. Apart from anything else, you're way outside the GATT principles, because the GATT principles quite clearly state that no territory should interfere
in the management of another TLD. We're not talking about the management. We're talking about the string.
Well, okay,
there is no thing in the GATT principle that says anything about choosing the string, because by definition, the strings were chosen in the Roman script.
I fully agree
with Avery in this case. If you have something that is geared towards facilitating the non-controversial strings, and I come back to what I was saying, if it is to facilitate the non-controversial string, how can you evaluate that a string is non-controversial if there is no way to receive comments? The fact that you receive comments or objections...
No, Bertrand. It says in the current document, it must be non-controversial within the territory.
Mm-hmm.
Not non-controversial in the world, but non-controversial within the territory.
Yeah, but I can imagine that the example you gave about Macedonia, I imagine that Macedonia, it's not controversial within Macedonia.
Which is
as Yanis rightly said.
Exactly, which is precisely why there are some additional definitions that say it's got to be an official language and it has to be meaningful.
But it would be considered as meaningful. My point is quite correct. Yeah, my point is
are you seriously suggesting that China, and
mm-hmm.
again, I don't want to take any specific examples, but the only way I can think mm-hmm. of dealing with this is to take a specific example. Are you seriously suggesting that we should put in place a mechanism that enables China to object to anything that Taiwan applies for, unless it is specifically what China thinks Taiwan should have? Because if you are, then fine, say so, and we'll deal with that. But unless you accept that China has the right to object to anything that Taiwan wants, except what China is prepared to let it have, and that if China does object, it comes out of the fast track, then we're wasting our time.
This is Avery. Can I?
Yeah.
I don't think that there's an equation between an objection being a veto. Though I know that mm-hmm. is often the way some things are looked at. An objection is something to be discussed and processed
and
dealt with, which may, the decision at the end of the day may be China, you know, that's all very nice, but according to WISIS principles, you don't have a right to say, you know, and so on and so forth. And at which point you've had the objection. An objection doesn't necessarily equal
for
a veto.
Right.
No, I accept that. But if you accept that At the moment, the definition of uncontroversial within what we've been working on is uncontroversial within the territory. If you want to change that definition and make it uncontroversial outside of the territory, then by definition, an objection puts you outside of the fast track, or at the very least, takes you out of the fast track for now, and forces us to set up a whole other mechanism for dealing with those objections within the fast track, without knowing what the full-blown policy is going to be yet, et cetera, et cetera.
That is what I had understood from when the group was formed.
Exactly. And what that means, no, I understand completely, and what that means is not there is a language committee that says, is this within the definition of meaningful? And there's not just a technical committee that says, is this technically acceptable? But there is a whole other mechanism that says, China has objected. Does this or does this not meet the policy? So where you head to now, and let's not worry about other TLDs objecting, because that's a whole different issue. Let's just deal with another country objecting. Where you're heading to now is a circumstance where you are allowing a process where one sovereign territory objects to what another sovereign territory wants, and you have some third party decide whether the original sovereign territory's application is within the rules or not within the rules?
Yeah. It's not another sovereign territory that's deciding. First of all,
it's not another sovereign territory. Sorry, you're correct. It is a third party deciding.
And that makes it controversial. I understand that. And as I say, first of all, that's what I had understood controversial meant when this group was formed.
Mm-hmm.
But second of all, what I'm contending is, without the process, do you not think that on seeing that Taiwan's application is on the board's docket for 3 weeks hence, that they are not going to object in the strongest possible terms in every possible venue? So you haven't eliminated that objection.
Yes, you have.
You merely said, board, you're the one that has to deal with China.
You are absolutely correct, what you've done is you have given the board the opportunity to you have taken ICANN out of a fight between two territories. Otherwise, what you're doing is you're putting ICANN in the middle of a fight between two territories, which is simply not acceptable.
Chris, sorry to interject here. How putting the board right in the middle of the fight is taking ICANN out of the debate.
Bertrand, that's not correct. The board has the ability to simply, if we have a mechanism that says, are you on the ISO 3166 list? Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Is your language official by our definition? Yes. Or let's assume it's yes, obviously. Yes.
A recognized language is a... Oh, okay.
Is this meaningful within the definition? Yes. End of story. That's it. Doesn't matter what anyone else says, you can have it.
I understand. So let's put it this way. What we're describing is actually a diversity of cases that we would like to see going through the fast track. Let's say that there are a few criteria that, if they are met, they basically grant acceptance, even if there are objections. You are on the ISO list. You are on the UN list. You have the right language in the UN list, and there is no contention at the national level by whatever means there is, and in any case the government is okay with the string, then maybe this is granted, boom. Second, case where you choose a different string than the string that is in the list. Now, how would you deal in the system with the Russian case of .rf? I personally think that it is likely to be non-controversial. How do we check that this is non-controversial?
Who decides that?
Sorry?
That's precisely the point. Who
decides that it's non-controversial.
And I agree with that, Ray. If you don't have a process that solicits comments from outside the country,
why?
Then you... Well, no, but listen...
But are you seriously suggesting that France would accept...
Chris, I mean, it's not that I'm...
A process by which Germany or UK or Australia could comment and stop France's application for a CCTLD, because that
Chris,
is what
Chris,
you're
Chris,
talking
Chris,
about.
Chris, I go to what Avery was saying. First of all, comments are not veto, one. Second, if you take the case of any country, and if you apply the mechanism by which Taiwan, which is on the ISO list,
yes,
chooses something that is got China in Chinese, mm-hmm, and you say China will have no way to make a comment on that, then we are out in the blue and it's not even...
That's why you need to have a linguistic committee to actually confirm that...
But it's not a linguistic issue.
It is a linguistic issue.
No, because this is not a linguistic issue. It's a political issue. We all know what are the problems.
No.
The question is, can we have a mechanism that facilitates solving this problem? If we believe that China, in any case, will want to prevent Taiwan from having any idea in CCTLD, I'm sorry, we can discuss for ages, there will be no way we can establish, I believe, I might be wrong, but I believe we cannot establish any kind of process that will guarantee that, to put it in the other way, the sovereign rights of one specific territory.
I find this really hard to deal with, and I'll tell you why.
Yeah.
On the one hand, I've got the U.S. and I've got U.S. and Canada,
mm-hmm,
and various other governments saying to me, you cannot have a circumstance where the choice of a sovereign territory is interfered with by a linguistic committee, on the one
mm-hmm
hand. On the other hand, I've got other government representatives saying, no, this should all be open to objection or comment by other governments.
No,
now,
wait a second.
I don't know what the answer to this is, but fundamentally, those two things are incompatible.
I don't think they are, because this goes back, and it's a question, I mean, in most cases, and I saw that in the discussion of the WHO's principles in the GAC, you perfectly know that there is a theoretical incompatibility between the U.S. position and the European position. If those things were so incompatible, there would be no way we could have issued principles. The methodology to do this was to go to a higher level and see what was the purpose of the process we wanted to establish for the principles.
But
in that case...
With huge respect, Bertrand, those are principles that do not need to operate in practical circumstances. What we're trying to do is come up with a methodology that needs to operate in a practical circumstance. Please explain to me how it is possible, on the one hand, to say you cannot have a check on whether the string meets the definition of what is required by a group of independent experts, but you can have the opportunity for other governments who may or may not actually have an interest to lodge comments which could in fact derail the delegation. How are those two things compatible?
I mean, then I return the question and say, can you tell me in any way that there will be a process that will allow one single government to decide on its own what its string is, irrespective of any comments by anybody else, even if the linguistic committee, and it's even worse, if the linguistic committee says, this might be controversial, should that be sufficient, and should it be even stronger?
No.
Then the possibility for others to comment?
Hang on a second.
I don't understand.
Fundamentally, at the end of the day, it's a decision for the board. Every delegation or re-delegation is a decision for the board. Okay?
But this is why Avery is right, and we are creating just the risk of having in the board ongoing protracted XXX issue.
So what do you suggest we do?
This is why I'm talking about a process. We're talking about the five track and the identification of strings.
No,
and
it's not our job to identify the strings. Our job is to come up with the methodology to identify the strings.
No, but that's what I mean. The purpose of the track. I'm sorry, I'm trying to go positive here.
Yeah.
I'm not trying to make things more complicated. What I'm just trying to see is how to move faster to identify things that are non-controversial. And I must confess
that... So you're
suggesting
that countries should put in a note to a committee telling us what it is that they want, or not us, another committee, telling us what it is that they want.
That they intend to, yeah?
And those things should then be thrown open for public comment from anywhere you like, from VeriSign, from affiliates, from China, from Russia, from other territories, publicly, open for comment. Those comments should then be looked at by someone.
Mm-hmm.
And then a decision should be made as to whether the thing the territory said they want is sufficiently non-controversial for them to actually be given it as a CCTLD. Is that basically what you're saying?
What I'm saying, to go in your line, is that, as Avery said, whether we put it into the process early on or we don't, this discussion will happen, and it will happen either at the board level, which is, I think, the worst situation, or it can happen earlier on. That's my point. And once again, we're not necessarily going to be soliciting the agreement of others. I mean,
so what are you doing then?
What do you mean?
What are we doing then? If we're not soliciting, what's the purpose of allowing comment if you're not going to listen to the comment?
Hi, this is Aubrey again. I think if I can't answer that one, I think it's obvious that the comments need to be listened to. I think they need to be checked off. Yes, this was solved by the linguistics committee. Yes, this was solved by the technical. Now, if there's something that comes up in the political realm, then you're in a and we don't have a mechanism for that. I certainly wouldn't suggest that ICANN is the one that can solve that. And then I think you are into outside mechanisms, and I don't have an answer for what is the outside mechanism or outside body that can, at a national level, give you some kind of indicator. I do think you have to listen, and I think most of the time what you'll be listening to has a very low content-to-noise ratio.
I agree with everything you said, Avery, and if I can add to that, my point would be this. If it's not acceptable to have a committee of linguistic experts check whether the string is meaningful under our definition, what is going to be, what committee or group of people or gathering is going to be acceptable to look at the comments, the objections, or the input from all over the world and decide whether that comment, objection, or input is relevant or real or should be taken seriously? If a committee of linguistic experts isn't acceptable, then who is actually going to look at the comments and decide that they are right or they are wrong? Who's going to be the arbiter of the value of the comments?
Do I understand you correctly, Chris, in thinking that in your mechanism, this kind of issue would be addressed by the board, and that in that case it would be the board that would be in the position of making that decision?
I'm sorry, I'm not clear. I don't think I understand what you're saying. Just say that again. What are you asking me about?
What you're saying, if I understand you correctly, if I try to rephrase what I understand in what you're saying is, if a linguistic committee cannot solve the kind of addressing the comments that might come, then we don't do anything at that level.
Oh, hold on
when
a second.
It comes,
well, maybe I've misunderstood. Are you suggesting that the linguistic committee, that yes, a linguistic committee is acceptable, and that it should go out for public comment?
No. What I understood from what you said earlier, and sorry if I misunderstood, what I understood is that ultimately it would be the board, if there is anything that is objected by other actors, which might happen, as I've already said, it will be up to the board to have to sort through those comments, right?
No, okay. This is what...
Sorry, I misunderstood.
Maybe, I'm not sure. Maybe you didn't. This is what I'm suggesting. This is what I think, because I agree with Avery. Of course,
there's always the ability to object. This is what I think happens under our current plan.
Uh-huh.
So this is currently as written, not accepted yet, but currently as written. The territory comes with the string.
Mm-hmm.
The string, the language is an official language by our definition, which means it's listed as an official language in the various lists that we've discussed, or it is evidenced by a letter from the government to be a language in administrative use.
Mm-hmm.
Or constitutional use or whatever. So that's fine. There's no problem with that. That seems to be relative consensus on that, so that's not a problem.
Mm-hmm.
That's the first step. Second step is that the string itself has to be meaningful within the definition that we've suggested in the document.
Mm-hmm.
What we're saying is if the string that is put forward is not the long form or short form name,
mm-hmm.
in the UN list,
mm-hmm.
then it should be confirmed by the linguistic committee that it is in fact meaningful for the territory.
Mm-hmm.
If the linguistic committee says yes, it is in fact meaningful for the territory,
mm-hmm.
then and the technical committee ticks it and says it's technically not a problem with Unicode and all that stuff, then the next step is it goes to through the IANA process of delegation and all the usual steps are taken. And then it goes, that IANA says, yes, we believe that it's okay, tick technically, tick this, tick that, local internet community, blah, blah, tick, tick, tick. And then it goes to the board for approval. Now, Avery is quite correct that at any of those stages that are public, it would be open for anyone to start lobbying, objecting, sending letters to the board saying, do you realize, and this is just an example, do you realize, because nobody else seems to have realized, that actually what Laos has applied for is an abbreviation of Los Angeles in Laotian,
mm-hmm.
rather than an abbreviation of Laos in Laotian.
Mm-hmm.
So of course it's open to people to lobby the board, of course it's open to people to make objections, but the process itself is a confined, closed process, and the application goes to the board, and the linguistic committee has said either they haven't needed to say because it's on the list, because it's not on the list, they've confirmed that it's a meaningful string, the technical committee have said yes, it's perfectly fine from a Unicode point of view and all the other stuff that they need to do,
mm-hmm.
And IANA has said, yes, the local internet community is fine, the CCTLD manager is technically competent, tick. Then it's up to the board to decide whether to actually delegate the CCTLD or not. And if, as it is right now, and there are examples
mm-hmm.
of the board
mm-hmm.
refusing to delegate CCTLD or redelegate mm-hmm. CCTLD, despite all the recommendations being in place.
Okay.
So
I'm
happy for China to come charging in on its, and again, no offense to China, to come charging in on its big white horse and say, yes, yes, we understand that what Taiwan has applied for has met all of these things, but do not give it to them.
Well, Taiwan won't. It will never be in that case because Taiwan is not on the UN list.
This is an example.
Yes, but it's not on the UN list. So
but it's on the ISO list. So therefore,
yes,
it can happen.
Yes, but it's not on the UN list. And what you've described, I listened very carefully. What I now understand better is the following, and correct me if I'm wrong. The language body, whatever it is mostly useful in the cases where fundamentally it is about checking on strings that are related to territories on the UN list, and the country, for whatever reason, chooses to use a different string than the string that on the UN list is listed as one of its denominations. In that case, the linguistic thing allows to check whether, if this is the case, allows to check that the country is not abusing its right to do this. My concern is,
There are two specific reasons why you would use the linguistic committee. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
They're three. Sorry, Bart, three. They are these.
Which three which have been discussed, say, early in the call,
yeah,
when Yana's was still on the call, is, say, when the language is not on the list, the name of the territory is not on the list, and all its abbreviations.
This is exactly what I was... I rightly understood that.
No, Taiwan... No, hang on. I just want to make sure you're clear, because you stopped me on Taiwan, so I want to make sure you're clear. Taiwan is on the ISO list, but it's not on the UN list.
That's my point. This is exactly what
means,
I meant.
What that means is that Taiwan would go to the linguistic committee.
Yes, but my point was precisely this one. I don't think a linguistic committee is a tool to solve the Taiwan problem or any other thing. It's not a linguistic issue. That's
no,
my very point.
No, the only question is, no, you're wrong. You're wrong in this context. The only question for the linguistic committee is, sorry, I'll start again. If Taiwan is on the ISO 31661 list,
mm-hmm.
which they are,
yeah,
then by definition, they are entitled to a CCTLD.
CCTLD, absolutely.
That's it. End of story.
Yeah.
There is no discussion. They are entitled.
Yeah.
The next question is, to what are they entitled?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
The official language in Taiwan, in their constitution,
mm-hmm.
is Chinese.
Right.
So there is no question that they are entitled to a Chinese language,
yeah.
IDN CCTLD.
Fully
under our rules, right?
Mm-hmm.
So the only question is, what string are they entitled to?
Yes, I understand.
Now, because Taiwan is not on the UN list,
mm-hmm.
there is no
reference.
Chinese
mm-hmm.
Short form name
mm-hmm.
or long form name for Taiwan on the UN list.
Yes, I agree.
There's no automatic tick.
Yes.
Because if Taiwan was on that list
mm-hmm.
with a short form or a long form name, if they chose either the short form name or the long form name,
mm-hmm.
or a part of those.
Yeah, everything would be fine.
Then there would be no problem.
Absolutely.
So therefore, because they're not, they would need to go to the language committee and say, this is what we have chosen, and the language committee would confirm that it's meaningful. Now, it doesn't mean they would reject the application if it's not meaningful. It doesn't mean that they would publicly, you know, pillory the Taiwanese for putting in an application. What it means is, effectively, is that the Taiwanese CCTLD managers, which TWNIC, would be talking to the language committee and saying, we think this is what we would like.
Mm-hmm.
And the language committee would say, yeah, that looks fine. Or they would say, well, you know what? That actually isn't a meaningful representation of Taiwan. But maybe this would be. So how about we actually start talking about it and see if we can come up with some sort of agreement? That's what we're talking about. We're not talking about some kind of exam where you put your application in and the committee looks at it and goes, no, fail, not acceptable. Avery.
This is not Avery, this is Hong.
Oh, sorry, Hong, I apologize.
Right. I fully understand what you explained. Last time I mentioned the objection procedure and non-contentiousness. Today I understand I'm not alone on this issue, but I'm not going to repeat my question. I have another question now. That is about the another step of the fast track procedure. That is how to make the procedure really fast. I've heard a lot of comments, concerns on the power or function of this language committee. It seems that a lot of people, a lot of stakeholders, are not really comfortable with the function of this committee. And to my understanding, for the user community, to make the procedure really complicated will really slow down the whole process. This is not in anybody's interest. Why don't we remove this procedure? I know you're going to say we remove the procedure, it's not going to be functional. I have another proposal. That is, it is a fast track. Why don't we based on some well-established principles? Oh, you talk about a principle. Yes, we do need principle.
Right,
there
right.
are some principle that is now in place. That is just been mentioned by the gentleman that he raised issue that why don't we use the UN list as the basis of this fast track. This is only a fast track. This is not a full-blown policy development process. For the other CCs outside the list, they have the opportunity in the PDP. For the fast track, why don't we use this?
Because the board's resolution I understand exactly what you're saying, and I accept that. The board's resolution quite clearly states that the ISO 31661 list is the basis upon which pool from which you take your CCTLDs.
Yes.
And you cannot arbitrarily decide today that for the purposes of IDN CCTLDs, either in the fast track or not, that you are suddenly going to exclude a number of territories simply because they're not on another list that you've chosen to use. The only definitive list of territories that are entitled to CCTLDs is the ISO 31661 list.
Oh,
and
sure, we are not
hang on a second. Hang on a second. Giannis, did you want to say something?
Yes, I'm still on the call. I was on the mute. I wanted to react a little bit and explain how I see language committee working and then since we are on China-Taiwan, example. So, for instance, let's assume that Taiwanese will come to board and say we want in our IDN CCTLD dot China.
Yes.
And then language committee say maybe you're not right. So consider.
Maybe.
So
not meaningful.
That is how I see the language committee and then. Taiwan will go and say we want I don't know what and they say fine, so if you come with Taiwan that's fine with us, you are on as Taiwan listed on ISO, let's go ahead and we confirm that whatever symbols you are putting forward is a correct translation that sounds like Taiwan.
Yes.
So and that's it and nobody else can intervene, but this is the let's say, work of the language committee. Another example, if Russian Federation say we don't want a Russia, we want RF or PF, RF. So then language committee and say, okay, that's fine, that's everything is fine, but board, you should be aware that RF in Bulgarian means something pejorative or something, I don't know, but the language committee, the experts may, knowing the whole range of languages, and so say, be careful. Go to Russian. Say, you know, this is something. Are you sure that you still want RF? And this again, the language committee is something which helps board, helps everybody in the process. They don't object anything. They just advises board. Say yes, you're right. This can be true, but the ultimate decision still belongs to the board.
Can I just agree with everything you said except for one thing, which is I think that whilst I agree with you that ultimately the language committee would be advising the board, I think that our concept was that the language committee would actually be involved earlier on and actually be talking to the territory and actually liaising with them and saying, you know, this may not work linguistically. So only in the final analysis would the language committee be effectively communicating with the board and saying this is a problem. One would hope that earlier on they would be saying to the Russians, to take your example, you do realize that what you've asked for in Bulgarian is actually in Bulgarian a problem. So can we work together to try and come up with something that's acceptable?
I agree. I meant that. I skipped that part. But again, this is just an assistant. This is a tool. How to prevent that something wrong is not going into the
group. Sure. Who else was trying to speak at that point?
Chris, I just want to make one clear statement.
Yes, but
I do fully, and this is Dr. I do fully reiterate that the reference list is the ISO 31661 list.
Yes.
Any territory on the ISO 31661 list is entitled to an IDN CCTLD. This is absolutely clear. What we're discussing here is the way to make it as easy as possible to overcome the difficulties that might arise.
Yes.
This is very clear. The other point is I am not aware of the discussions that are going on, probably, between Taiwan and China, because I would be very surprised if they haven't discussed these things. So my question is, do we have any reason to believe that if Taiwan makes a submission for a string, it is likely to be something that China will vehemently object, like if Taiwan comes with .China as a name, or whether there is any kind of discussion and agreement that is almost already on the way and that we're not aware, or at least I am not aware of?
But Bertrand, I have no idea, but we can't possibly make a methodology based on the individual, based on the possible individual responses from one territory or another, because what works for a possible discussion in respect to China and Taiwan is not necessarily going to work with anybody else.
This is why I was asking the number of territories.
I understand completely. I mean, but I think, you know, it's really hard to, maybe this is just a sort of difference with the way that the GAC works and the way that others work. So it seems to me that all we've been trying to do is to come up with some sort of mechanism that's actually workable. And I think there's a grave danger here of getting incredibly complicated. We're talking about, in my view, we're talking about something really, really simple, which is this. Are governments prepared to have a circumstance where some body actually confirms or checks to ensure that what they are applying for meets the rules? Whether that is actually not turns it away, not formally refuses it, nothing like that, but actually just endorses, perhaps that's the right word, endorses what they've applied for. Whether that process happens at the beginning, or whether you just say, no, you can't accept that, but at the end, the board may, in fact, decide to employ expert advice, and if that advice comes back and says, you know what, despite the fact that the government of XYZ says that this is meaningful, it's not, then that entitles the board to say, well, in that case, you're not having it. But I mean, that's really what we're talking about. We're not talking about anything else, just that. And despite the fact that literally, and 45 minutes ago, I tried to move away from this subject, we're still talking about it.
Just fulfilling your prophecy, I'm sorry.
Well, that's right, and you're doing it extremely well.
Can I finish my point? And then
I'm sorry,
I have to go. It's very late.
Yes,
all right,
go ahead.
And I can be very brief. That is, in my belief, that if we have this mechanism called language committee, we cannot avoid all these political issues. It's going to be very controversial and could really detrimental to the whole process.
What do you suggest we do then?
Let me finish, please. So what I'm suggesting is to avoid this problem and remove this language committee from this process, to simplify the whole process, to make it clear-cut, crystal clear, that is, use the UN list, so we don't need an evaluation on linguistic issue or political issue. There is a standard there. That is, okay, thank you. I'm back.
Hello?
Hi, you still there, Cheryl?
Yes, hi, Cheryl.
Cheryl, I'm gathering Hong has left the call. That sounds to me like at least she was suggesting one of your earlier proposals, Chris, which was if the government wanted to get it.
Yeah.
Yes, but I want to make it abundantly clear that what I was because it's really important. I want to make it abundantly clear that what I was saying was not that that would exclude territories that were not on the UN list, but that there would need to be exceptions.
And can I suggest that because it's obviously a highly emotive issue, but also a very late hour for Hong, that in fact we make sure that gets captured in writing on the list?
Yeah, sure. I mean, not
taking it up with the Alex. That's
not a problem. But Cheryl, I mean, you really need to. Yes, that's fine. But can you at least see if you can
follow up? But I will.
Yeah, because I'm unclear now where we got to with that.
You're not the only one.
Yeah. Okay. Cool. Good. I just wanted to make sure that it wasn't just me. Let me make it clear. I mean, I have no problem whatsoever with the possibility of sticking to the UN list from the point of view of you can if your language is not on there, you get it on there. But I have to say I think there are immense problems with that. And I kind of alluded to them in my email, the least of which is there is actually no formal process. So if India, take India as an example, if India decided we want three or four or five of our other official languages to be placed onto that list, fantastic. But as far as I can ascertain, there is actually no process by which they can do that. And Bart, that's basically that's your understanding too, isn't
yeah.
it?
Yeah, yeah.
So it's all very well saying that, you know, that might be a good idea, but it's only going to work if we can provide information that says, and India, in order for you to do this, this is what you do. So I don't think that's going to be very, I don't think at the end of the day that's actually going to be very helpful. Look, it's 20 minutes past midnight here in Melbourne.
In our part of the world, yes.
In Sydney. And I'm not entirely... We've been on this call now for 2 hours and 20 minutes, and I'm not entirely sure we're going to get very much further.
Can I ask a quick question about the process?
Yes.
This is Aubrey.
Yes, of course you can.
In terms of dealing some of these things, I forget... Their opposition or contrary statements will be allowed in final report or not. So
no,
that
absolutely.
May be.
Yeah, absolutely.
Right. So I didn't remember where we had left that. So that may be one way where some of these issues that can't satisfy all of us can get included and discussed at length in the next version of the report.
That's correct, but I think we need. Yes, that's right, and I don't.
Oh, I'm not saying we should stop talking.
No, I know you're not, and I don't, thank you, I'm not suggesting we should either, but I also think it's really important that we bear this in mind. If we do not come to the board with a consensus position, let me start again. There's a difference between a minority position, which is and Avery, no offence intended by this, but which is Avery's position, right? Or a minority position that is Avery's position and Cheryl's position. That's fine. But if we end up in a circumstance where we effectively have, we do not have consensus on a mechanism, then you can pretty much rest assured that the board is not going to do anything, because why would they? We need to get to a point where the majority of us are agreed on some sort of, on a way forward. Otherwise, we're effectively abandoning responsibility. Well, no, that's unfair. We're not abandoning responsibility, but we're unable to agree, and therefore nothing will happen.
This, I think, Chris, this goes back to one of your remarks early on in this call, is that, say, as a way forward, the fast track doesn't work.
That conditional was included in the original concept.
Yeah.
That you might
Indeed,
find that conditional is met.
Yep.
You are quite correct. Absolutely. And it is entirely possible that we will not be able to reach an agreement and a resolution.
And Chris, Cheryl here, I'm not trying in any way to presume what Hong was saying, or the subtext of what Hong was saying, but I think it is that extreme frustration, and indeed I could go as far as say absolute anger in mass populations. if that's the outcome that you're going to get from the users and the potential users who would want to be taking advantage of what you're doing. And
I understand that.
Really
I understand that, Cheryl. I understand that, but what I think, I mean, there are not that many. There are not that many occasions where I'm actually prepared to forcibly nail my colours, my personal colours to the mast. But on this particular issue, I am absolutely adamant. I am not prepared to have a circumstance. Personally, I am not prepared to have a circumstance. I am prepared to have a circumstance where every territory is only ends up with the possibility of one ID in CCTLD. But what I am not prepared to have is a circumstance where a territory is excluded from having an ID in CCTLD simply because they are not on a particular list.
I can't imagine the...
If they're on the ISO 31661 list, then by definition, they are entitled to an ID in CCTLD. And there is no way that I will allow, that I will put my name to a recommendation
mm-hmm.
that allows territories to be excluded simply because they're not on another list.
And I can't imagine the at-large community would either.
Exactly.
What I'm saying is there's a frustration on the need for the fast track and the difficulties we're facing in reaching consensus on what is extremely complicated as well as delicate issues.
Well, it's incredibly complicated. And all right, look.
Chris, I think early to even to think about the white flag. We still have two months to go. I think at least three or four conference calls are ahead of us. So I think that there was a good discussion on language committee, and there is some understanding what we mean by saying language committee. As we discussed earlier, we need to put maybe this question aside, but try to circulate a short note. What language committee would do, what language committee would not do, and then each of constituencies would have a chance to talk through and say, and at the end we can decide whether to abandon the language committee idea, which will not exclude that IANA would seek advice of linguistic experts anyway, because IANA people don't speak all languages of this world, so. I think that our responsibility is to deliver whatever we can to the state what we can deliver, because alternative is that ICANN will be blamed by everybody on this planet saying that we're putting brakes on putting IDNs in the roof, and this is something what is not in our interest. Neither in government interest, nor in at-large committee interest, nor in CCNSO interest, and I believe also GNSO interest. So therefore, all of us, we are interested in the end result. Simply, we need to talk it through, to think it through, and put forward as simple as we think it can be. So that's it, and it's no time for white flag. Not yet.
Oh, I agree with you completely. Mm-hmm. I mean, I know I've been saying it, but I'm just trying to be realistic and make everyone clear. But absolutely, we need to fight on. And Yanis, I believe that the CC community on this working group are generally, and I underline and stress the word generally, accepting of the current methodology as outlined, subject to certain of the caveats put in place in respect to the language committee. The pushback in respect to the language committee is mainly coming from the government side, and I don't know what I can do to assist with that, but I'm really happy to help in any way that I can.
I think we need to put on paper in bullets what language committee will do, what language committee will not do. Maybe we'll start what language committee will not do.
Okay.
And as I said, I intend to organize a GAC conference call specifically on IDNs on 20th of May.
Yes.
And this would be very useful if that two pager, Bart, if you could prepare it and circulate.
Yep.
Maybe something like 10 days before.
Yep.
Yeah, okay, that's fine. Yeah, we can do that because if nothing else, we're going to have this face to face, at least a little partial face to face meeting in Geneva with people dialing in, and that means that Bart and I will also be able to spend a fair bit of time, you know, working on the stuff. So
and then also I think it would be useful to plan IDNC working group meeting in Paris on Saturday.
On the Saturday, I agree. 3 till 6 or something like that.
Something like that, yes. Or three to whatever
whenever.
You need.
Yeah, 3 till whenever. Yeah. Exactly.
Oh, good. If you have 3 to whenever, that means those of us having meetings can join you when we finish. By the way, one thing I wanted to say in response to Giannis is I'm not suggesting we throw in white flags either. And I just want to sort of say that the things that I'm saying, I'm really saying in terms of if we really want this process to come through and not meet a lot of community opposition,
yeah.
I'm suggesting these are things we need to think about and deal with. And
sure.
And that's the position that I've been taking, you know.
Mm. I agree with you, Avery. I think that we need to try and be, we need to work towards being constructive. Okay, look, let's wind the call up now.
It's 12:30.
Some of us need some sleep. Let's
or wine.
Should we do it all again next week for the sheer hell of it?
Oh, look.
Sheer hell of it.
Do you want me to commit not to participate, Chris?
No, Bertrand, I would love you to be there. I can see. don't tell me, Bertrand. No, I'm kidding. Let's start. We'll send a note out. Let's make a day for next week. Whether Tuesday works or not, I don't know, but we'll check our diaries and see.
Yeah.
Let's make a day for next week.
I think because we have still some other issues on the agenda, and say we close this discussion on the linguistic committee and the objection process and.
Let's have a call next week on other stuff.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that's fine.
We can't afford to use the word close this discussion.
What he means is not talk about it next week, Cheryl.
That I agree with.
That's not the same thing, I understand, but yeah. Okay, well let's agree to do that. We'll send a note out to the list and fix a call for sometime next week, which is convenient, and we'll talk then. Thanks, everybody.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye.